Welcome. Well, has it been a good week for you so far? I love this event here. You know, when we do conferences like this in the U.S., we proportionally don't attract nearly as many people as Tech Days Netherlands here. Wonderful, wonderful conference. Glad to see you here. My name is Jeff Proceis, and we're going to spend the next 75 minutes together talking about jQuery. And I am going to be showing lots of demos, lots of sample code. If you would like a copy of those demos, you can go to this URL that's shown on the screen behind me at your convenience and download this zip file. It's not very large, maybe 6 or 7 megabytes, but it has all kinds of interesting samples in it, all demonstrating various aspects of jQuery. So that is winelect.com/downloads/jQuery.zip. And if you haven't had a chance to write that down or take a picture, see me afterwards, I'll be glad to show that again. And let's see if I can figure out how to get all the way. There we go. So this session is entitled jQuery for HTML5 Developers. And let me give you just a quick explanation of why we decided to schedule this session. jQuery has been around for a while. It's an awesome tool. A lot of developers are already pretty familiar with it. But a lot of us are really just now coming to need it, because a lot of us are transitioning from whatever platform we work on now to HTML5. A lot of buzz and hype, obviously, around HTML5. If you're an HTML5 developer, you're going to be building browser-based applications, and you've never seen jQuery, then you're in the right place here, because jQuery will make your life so much better than it was before. With HTML5, of course, we're writing directly to APIs exposed by browsers. And jQuery does a couple of things. Number one, it abstracts all those annoying differences between browsers so that you can write one set of code and not have to build in all sorts of browser-specific routines to say, is this IE? If so, I'll do this. If it's Chrome, I'll do this. If it's Firefox, I'll do something else. To a large extent, jQuery does that for you. That improves your quality of life. Gives you more time to spend at home with the kids and things like that. But even beyond abstracting browser differences, jQuery does something else really, really important. It takes some of the most annoying things that we often do in JavaScript and reduces what might have been 5 or 10 or 20 lines of code down to oftentimes one line of code. And of course, the remarkable thing about jQuery is that it works even in really old browsers. Now, if you're an HTML5 developer, you may have the luxury of targeting only HTML5 browsers. More commonly, even if we're targeting HTML5 browsers, we still have to support older ones, so we resort to various fills and polyfills, shims, and things like that to provide down-level support for HTML5 features. jQuery, in one way of looking at it, is one big polyfill that makes it easier to do things, whether you're doing it in an HTML5 browser or in an older browser. Now, I have more material here than I can probably get through, so I'm going to go very fast, just like you did in the HTML5 session yesterday. And we're going to cover just as much as we can, because I want you to see as much of jQuery as you can and get a feel for it to the best extent possible in the time we have together. I want to start with this little code sample right here. This is straight-up JavaScript, no jQuery. The idea behind this code is that I'm going in querying the browser for a DOM element whose ID is expando table. Presumably that's an HTML table. Then I'm iterating over the rows in the table, finding the second cell, or TD, in each row, and I'm adding an event listener, registering a handler for click events, so I know when the second cell in any table row is clicked. Then I have a click handler down here where I'm going to do a little bit of work. When that click occurs, what I'm doing there is finding a hidden div in that table cell and either showing it or hiding it, depending on what its current state is. So the idea here is we let the user click a table row, and that row expands to show a hidden div or collapses to hide it, which is all fine and good. This works in almost every browser in the world except IE. It does work in IE9. It wasn't until IE9 that IE came to support a lot of the things that other browsers supported for a while. For example, in earlier versions of IE, instead of calling add event listener, you had to call attach event. In earlier versions of IE, when an event was fired, instead of getting information in an event object passed to that event handler, you had to walk up to the window object and get that event object from there. And even then, that event object in IE was different than other event objects in other browsers. So to make that same code work in older versions of IE, we had to do this. We had to make these highlighted changes, which means without jQuery, if we wanted to do everything I just described and we wanted to do it in a browser-agnostic way, we ended up writing code like this, where we check, does this browser expect me to call add event listener, or does it expect me to call attach event? Does this browser hand me a JavaScript event object when the click event fires, or do I have to go get it from the window object, and so on and so forth? This is what makes JavaScript programming awful. When it's not the language, it's not the APIs, it's all these silly differences between browsers. And that is one of the things that jQuery fixes. Here's the same code in jQuery. Now, this statement or set of statements doesn't make sense. It'll make sense, I believe, in a few minutes. Here's what I'm doing. Whenever you see that dollar sign in jQuery, what you're actually doing is calling the jQuery function, which is the heart of the jQuery library. In fact, jQuery defines two entities in the global JavaScript namespace. Number one, it defines a function named jQuery. And number two, it defines the symbol dollar as a shortcut for the function. So anytime you see dollar something in jQuery, you could, if you wanted, write out jQuery instead. But by using the dollar convention, you save typing. What I'm doing here is calling the jQuery function, asking it to find for me the table or other DOM element whose ID is expandOTable, to find every row in that table, to find the second column or TD in that row, to wire a click handler to every one of those. And by the way, inside that click method that I'm calling in jQuery, it checks to see whether the browser expects me to call add event listener, attach event, or whatever. And then I have a function, an event handling function that's called when that table row or table cell is clicked. You don't see it here, but another cool thing that jQuery does is it normalizes the event handling model in all of these browsers. Even if this is running in a browser that doesn't normally pass an event object to the event handler, jQuery passes it instead so that we can write this code leaning on jQuery and we can expect it to work in virtually every browser on the planet. Now going back a slide, would you rather write this or would you rather write this? I would rather write this. Now, one of the very first things that devs typically learn about in jQuery is something called the ready method or the ready function. So it's the first thing I want to introduce to you before I go into my first demo. So here's the deal. When we put JavaScript code in a page, we always want to make sure that that code doesn't execute too early. We don't want it to execute, for example, before the browser's had a chance to parse the HTML for the page and build the HTML DOM. So what developers sometimes do is they register a handler for the load event fired from the window object, which is pretty much universal in browsers. The problem with the load method is it doesn't fire right after the DOM is ready. It waits to fire until after all the images and other resources referenced in that DOM have been downloaded. So if you have a page that's heavy on imagery, might take several seconds or more on a slow connection to download all the imagery. If you put startup code in that window.load event handler, it won't execute until all those images have been downloaded. What we really want is a standard and agreed upon way in any browser to execute code the moment the DOM is ready, but before the browser has taken time to download images and other resources. It sounds simple, and in some browsers it is. Some browsers fire a special event named DOM content loaded when that DOM is ready, but not all browsers do. That's why jQuery gives you the ready function. In almost every jQuery example you ever see, somewhere in the page, there will be a clause like one of these two. Now, these are functionally identical. We typically use the shorthand form at the bottom, but if you prefer, you can use the longhand form at the top. The bottom line here is when you encapsulate your code in one of these handlers, jQuery does whatever is necessary in that browser to determine when the DOM is ready and calls your code inside that function. Again, guaranteed to work in all browsers, even ones that don't support a DOM content loaded event. Quick example here. I want to do some zebra striping on a table. Now, granted, In a modern browser that supports CSS 3, you could easily do this with just CSS. You don't need code. But if you want to do this in older browsers as well, you're going to have to write a little bit of JavaScript code. What I'm doing here is doing a little bit of jQuery inside that ready method that will select every odd-numbered here, cable row in that table, and change its background color to light green, producing the result you see here. Let me show you a quick demo. Let's pop out to Visual Studio, and I'm going to open that solution that's in the zip file that whose URL I gave you a moment ago. In fact, there are three solutions in that zip file. This is the simplest of them, but it has a lot of interesting stuff. I'm going to run a little page named dynamicdate.html. And here you see a newspaper-style website showing some content. But notice that date in the upper left corner, updated January 1st, 1970. I don't know about you, but that feels like stale content to me. So what I'd like to do is update that each time the page loads using JavaScript to show the current date. Believe it or not, as simple as that sounds, there are perils you will run into when you try to do that in all the different browsers out there. So let's use jQuery to do it so that it will bear the burden of making sure it works in every browser. So if we look at the page here in Visual Studio, we'll see that in the DOM, there's an HTML5 time element. That's one of those new semantic markup elements in HTML5. And that's where that date is being shown. Notice that that element has the ID today. So what I'm going to do is come up here, and I'm going to write a little jQuery ready handler. So let's do like this. We'll do the dollar function. And let's write a little bit of code inside that. Remember, we know that whatever we put inside here is going to execute once the DOM is ready, but without waiting for images to download. So first thing I want to do is use that jQuery function. I want to pass it a selector. That selector is going to be pound sign or hash today. Remember, that's the ID of the DOM element. In this case, this selector I'm passing in is really nothing more than a document.getElementById. That's what jQuery is doing under the hood here. But as you're going to see in a moment, one of the powers of jQuery is that we can pass in very, very rich CSS3 type selectors, even in browsers that don't support that natively. Now, I'm going to say more about this in a moment, but when you call the jQuery function, as I'm doing here, to query that browser DOM, what it's actually returning is a jQuery object, which is an array-like object that wraps zero or more DOM elements. We sometimes refer to that object as a wrapped set, because conceptually, what a jQuery query does is it returns a wrapped set of DOM elements that match the criteria you specified in the selector. What I'm going to do here is call a method of that jQuery object named text. That's one of literally dozens of methods that the jQuery object returned by the jQuery query returns that allows me to manipulate DOM elements. I'm calling the text method because I want to set the text of that element that I'm querying here. So I've got a little helper function here that will go get the current date and format it the way I want it displayed. So I'll just call that right here. And now when we run this page again, we see updated Friday, February 17th, 2012. Now, that looks a little bit fresher. As simple as that was, that one line of jQuery, you can't do that in one line without jQuery. Here's why. What jQuery is really doing here is it's finding that element whose ID is today, and it's setting that element's inner text property to the text that I passed to the text method. But guess what? Not all browsers expose an inner text property on DOM elements. In Firefox, for example, it's named text content. So in that seemingly simple text function, jQuery is looking at the browser it's running and is saying, which do I use? Inner text, text content, or whatever. And it is abstracting that out so that this will work in any browser. Again, that's one of the powers of jQuery, the fact that you can write JavaScript code and let it sweat the differences between these browsers and the way they expose their DOMs. Okay. Does all that make sense so far? So the next thing to talk about a bit is selectors. So in that example, I used a very simple selector. I called the jQuery function, the dollar sign, and I passed in the string pound sign today. Again, that's the equivalent in jQuery of a document.getElementById. It's asking for a reference to that one DOM element. CSS3 defines a very, very rich selector syntax in which we can select almost any combination of elements in a DOM with one statement, no matter how varied that collection is. If you're running in a browser that supports that native selector syntax, and some HTML5 browsers do, some don't, then you could do without jQuery. But jQuery supports all those CSS3 selectors, plus a few CSS3 doesn't support, and jQuery makes sure it works even in down-level browsers. So let me give you a quick look at the selector syntax in jQuery, then let's see if we can put it to work to do something useful. So one category of selectors you can pass to the jQuery function is what I call the simple selector. So I can select all the divs in the document, for example, just by specifying a tag name. I can select an element based on its ID with the pound sign, or based on the CSS class it's assigned using the dot syntax that you see right there. We can also use what are called selector combinations. In the first example, I'm asking jQuery to give me all the anchor tags, the A elements, that are descendants of div elements. So it won't include in that wrap set A elements that aren't descendants of divs. Now, the space separating div and A means give me the descendants of. If I was only interested in A elements that are direct children or direct descendants of divs, then I could replace the space with a greater than sign, as you see a little bit further down. jQuery also gives me a set of attribute selectors, which allows me to select DOM elements based on attributes and attribute values. In the second example here, if I wanted, for example, to select all of the images in my document whose source attribute has a value that ends with .png, in other words, I want to quickly find out in my DOM which images are PNGs as opposed to JPEGs or something, then I could use a selector string like that. In addition, jQuery gives me a whole boatload of pseudo-class selectors, also known as filters. When you see like tr colon odd, tr colon even, where we're asking jQuery to select only even-numbered table rows or odd-numbered table rows, those are examples of these filters or pseudo-class selectors at work. So we can do all sorts of things with this. We can select odd and even-numbered items. We can actually pass in a formula saying, give me every third item beginning with the 15th one. Almost anything you can imagine you can do here with jQuery. Now, let me go back to Visual Studio for a moment, and I want to show you a page that you may find interesting as you dig into jQuery and want to test your knowledge. In fact, this is a great example to run if you're interviewing someone and you've decided you do not want to hire them and you want to get them out of your hair really, really quickly. It's called selectors.html, and it's the same basic page that you saw a few moments ago with an added UI element at the top. Notice that box that says selector. What you can do here is type in a jQuery selector string, any string, no matter how simple or complex, it's valid in jQuery. I will execute that selector and then highlight all the DOM elements that matched that particular selection. So what if I passed in div? This asks jQuery to select all the divs in the document. Are there divs in here? Looks like there are a whole bunch of them. Remember that time element? Let's see if it's the only time element in the document. So I'll ask it, jQuery to select all time elements. It looks like that's the only one. We know that its ID is today, so I should get the same results if I did, whoops, not that way, misspelling it. If I spelled it that way, we should see the exact same thing. I could also do things like this. These nav elements you see in this page are actually unordered lists, ULs, with child LIs all stylized with CSS to make them look like breadcrumbs, left nav bars, and things like that. So I could find all the ULs in the document. Maybe I'm interested in LIs. LIs are always, usually children of ULs, but here you see the LIs themselves. Maybe I only want the even-numbered LIs for some reason, so I could even do filtering like that. So this is just the tip of the iceberg, but I want you to know from this that jQuery supports a very rich selector syntax. It replaces the more primitive selector syntaxes that browsers support natively, at least older browsers. But there's a lot more that jQuery does than give you cool selectors to use. I want to say more about that jQuery object. Remember, when you use jQuery to perform a selection, you pass a selector string into it. What's being returned is a jQuery object, also known as a wrapped set. And this is where most of the API that is jQuery lives. Once we have that wrapped set, it exposes dozens of methods that allow us to manipulate the elements represented in that wrapped set in various ways. I want to show you just a few examples of that. In this statement right here, I'm first calling the jQuery function, passing in a selector string, asking it to give me a jQuery object wrapping every odd-numbered table row in every table in this document. One of the many, many, many methods that the return jQuery object exposes to me is one named CSS, which allows me to quickly and easily and in a browser-agnostic way read or write CSS styles on that element. If I want to change the background color of every odd-numbered table row to light green, this call to CSS does it. And there's something I want to make sure I'm very explicit about here. You rarely ever have to iterate over the elements represented in a wrapped set, because when you call any jQuery object method like CSS, it does that iteration internally. This is going to affect every table row that matches the selection criteria, regardless of whether there's one of them or 10,000 of them. You do not have to iterate over that wrapped set calling CSS on each one. You could, but that's going to be most likely slower than just letting jQuery do that for you. So by design, these methods that the jQuery object exposes work on every member of the wrapped set. Now, you can iterate over a wrapped set, and here's one way to do it. But again, you probably never need to do that. If you do need to iterate over a wrapped set, and this is one example of why you might need to, the jQuery object gives you a method named each that's designed to do that for you. So in this example, instead of just striping a table, I want to do a rainbow striping. That's one example of something that does require me to manually iterate over the table rows so that I can assign a background color value to each table row based on its position in that table. So look what I do. I do the query to find all of those table rows. Then I use the jQuery objects each method to let it iterate over the table rows and to call a callback function that I've provided for each element that it iterates over. The parameter passed to that callback function, which I called I here, is the zero-based index of that element in the wrapped set. I simply use that as an index into the table of colors you see at the top and produce this striped rainbow table you see. If there were more rows in this, you would see those colors repeat as you go further down the table. Again, relatively rare to need to manually iterate over the contents of a wrapped set, but if you do need to do it, the dot each method is the proper way to do it. The text method you've seen, it gets or sets the inner text of an element and abstracts differences between browsers and how they expose that to you. One of my favorite methods in jQuery is the val method. Have you ever tried in JavaScript to find out which item is selected in a drop-down list or a list box? Can you believe how painful it is to do that? In almost every platform on the planet, you read a property like selected index from that drop-down list, right? Not in HTML. What you have to do is get a reference to that drop-down list, then manually iterate over its child elements, the option elements inside it, until you find the one that has a checked attribute on it. In jQuery, you never have to do that kind of thing, because you can call this val method on any object that can take input from the user, and it will figure out what the user typed into a text field or what item is selected in a drop-down list or what have you. So, just one example of how jQuery does things for you that are aggravating otherwise. Here's one of my favorite methods in jQuery. It's yet another of these methods that the jQuery object exposes to us. It's one of the best-kept secrets in jQuery. I think it's one of those things, once you know about it, I can almost guarantee you'll find uses for it. Since the dawn of time, developers have searched for ways to attach arbitrary data to DOM elements in a browser. Now, there is a multitude of ways to do it, but if you've ever researched this, you know that there are downsides to almost every way. What you're doing may work fine in one browser, but it may cause memory leaks in another. What the data method in jQuery allows you to do is to attach arbitrary data It could be a simple string. It could be a very complex JavaScript object encoded in JSON or what have you. It allows you to attach it to any DOM element, and it does it in a way that's non-intrusive in every browser. So it doesn't corrupt your DOM. It doesn't cause memory leaks or what have you. In these examples here, I'm attaching data to a DOM element. In the first one, I'm attaching a simple name value pair, name equals Jeff, then later going back and reading that back. But if I wanted to attach more complex data to it, I could use JSON to define a more complex JavaScript object, as you see on the third line here, and attach that to a DOM element. jQuery, among the hundreds of things it does, makes it easy, non-intrusive, and resistant to memory leaks to attach data to DOM elements. There are lots and lots of scenarios where this is useful. One scenario, drag and drop. I'm going to close out this presentation with a quick look at jQuery UI, which is a separate library that sits on top of jQuery and adds richness to the UI story in HTML. It gives you progress bar controls, dialog boxes, accordions, date pickers, all sorts of things that HTML itself lacks. It also provides a really nice drag-and-drop infrastructure that, unlike HTML5 drag-and-drop, which only works in the latest HTML5 browsers, works even in really old browsers. Oftentimes, when we're using jQuery UI drag-and-drop, it's useful when a drag operation begins to attach arbitrary data to that object so that if a drop occurs over a drop source, the drop source can consume that data. This makes it easy to do that. That's one of many scenarios in which we use this ability to attach arbitrary data to an object. Now, I've got lots more, so I'm going to skip on and kind of combine this with the next demo. So, jQuery event handling. You saw a quick example earlier of how event handling differs in different browsers. And I've got a little more detail here I want to show you. In this example, I'm selecting, without jQuery, all of the images in the document. I'm manually iterating through all those images, registering a click handler for each, so that when an image is clicked, I can do something. Maybe I want to zoom that image up and show it in an enlarged state to the user or something. Of course, that works in most browsers, except those versions of IE prior to IE9. Here's the changes that you would make to get this to work in IE. Not a big deal, not difficult once you know about it, but why do we have to write this kind of code? If you wanted to make that browser agnostic, you'd have to do an approach kind of like I did in that earlier example where you check to see, does the browser support add event listener, does it pass an event object to the handler, and all that. jQuery normalizes the event model so that every browser exposes events to you in a standard way. Here in jQuery, I select every image in the document, wire a click handler to each one, and then in that click handler, the inline function, notice an event object is being passed to it. jQuery makes sure that event object is there, even if the browser doesn't natively provide that event object. Inside the event handler, oftentimes you want a reference to the DOM element that was clicked or fired the event that you registered for. You can get that from this, which jQuery sets to reference that DOM element before it calls your event handler, or you can get it from event.target, and that's guaranteed to work in all browsers. Now, jQuery has a bunch of methods that you can use to register events. Click is one of them, but here are a bunch of the others. These are all shortcuts, if you will, for registering handlers for common events. So you've seen the click method already, but I could also do something like this. Suppose I've got a select element, a drop-down list, let's say, in the page, and I want to know when the user selects something from that list. So I call jQuery's change method on that select element, register an event handler, and now when the selection changes in the list, jQuery will notify me via event, and I can use that val method to find out which item is now selected, as opposed to having to iterate through all the child elements myself. Perhaps more importantly, jQuery gives you a generic way to bind events to event handlers called the bind method. Now, those methods you saw a couple of slides ago, shortcut methods like click and change and mouse enter and mouse leave, they are just shortcuts, they're conveniences. If you want to register a handler for click events, you can use the click method or the bind method. The big reason the bind method is there is that jQuery does not define shortcut methods for every event that a browser might fire. For example, if you want to process mouse wheel events, jQuery doesn't provide a special shortcut method for registering handlers for those events, so you would use the more generic bind method instead. Now, I haven't shown it here, but there is a complementary method named unbind, so that if you wish to unbind or deregister an event handler, you've registered the bind, or with any of the shortcut methods, you can do that with unbind. Let me show you here a couple of examples of jQuery events at work. So I want to go right down here, and I want to start with this one. If you were in my HTML5 session yesterday, you've seen this, but I didn't really show you the jQuery part of it. I'm going to now. This one won't run in IE9 because it uses two features of HTML5, the Canvas API and the File API, and IE9 supports the Canvas API but not the File API. However, it should work just fine in IE10, which I believe is going to be a very, very good HTML5 browser. And here's what it's going to let me do. This is an input type equals file element. I click the button. In jQuery, I've registered a handler for that element's change events. So when I select something from that open file dialog, an event handler was called inside jQuery. And what you're seeing there is an old picture of my daughter. Old because I think she was 5 or 6 years old here. She's now a freshman in college. But what I can do here, see those red eyes? I'm going to click them and fix them. I'm using the HTML5 Canvas API to edit pixels in that image. But I'm also using jQuery to make sure that when I run this in other browsers like Firefox or Chrome or what have you, jQuery is there to abstract the differences between those browsers. In fact, let's just find out. We should find it works exactly the same in Chrome. Let's test it. I'm not sure I've actually tested this one in Chrome, so I may regret doing what I'm about to do. But we'll try it anyway. So there we are in Chrome. We'll go select the same picture from Chrome. There we are. If I click the red eyes, yeah, there we go. Now, the really dicey one is Firefox. When you look inside here, you're going to see there's something that Firefox does different and that jQuery does not abstract for me, so I have to handle it manually. But take a look at this right here. So here is that page. And when it starts up, if that looks familiar to you, that's in virtually every, in fact, it is in every example I've got here. This is the jQuery ready method. I'm doing a few checks to make sure the browser supports the Canvas API and the File API in HTML5, and if not, I'm displaying a warning to the user. But then, here I'm registering a handler for the change events fired by that input type equals file element. Notice I'm using jQuery's change method to do that. And here I'm registering a click handler for that HTML5 canvas in which I display the selected image. I need to know when a click occurs on that canvas because that's when I go in and run my red eye reduction algorithm on the pixels in the vicinity of the cursor. So here's the change handler. Nothing special in here. This is just HTML5 stuff to read the file, show it to the user by drawing it out to a canvas. But this is a little bit more interesting. Here is that click handler here. And remember that this fires off when the user clicks inside the image. You know that's when I go do the red eye reduction. Take a look at this. The first thing I want to know when that click occurs is where in this image, or this canvas technically, did the click occur? Because I don't run my red eye reduction algorithm on every pixel in that picture. I only run it on the pixel under the cursor and in an area surrounding it. In most browsers, I can get that those X and Y offsets, those coordinates, from the offset X and offset Y properties of the event object. In every browser that is, except for Firefox, which stubbornly still refuses to implement those properties that every other browser does. So what I have to do here is check to see if those properties even exist in the event object. And if they don't, that pretty much tells me I'm running in Firefox, so I have to use a fallback algorithm to get the equivalent data in Firefox. Now, one reason I wanted to show you this is this. jQuery goes a long way towards abstracting the differences between browsers, but it doesn't go 100% of the way. In fact, remember, one of the things jQuery does with its event handling model is it makes sure that every browser passes in an event object to an event handler. Those event objects have lots of properties in them. There are generally 20 or 30 properties hanging off that event object. Most of them are shared by browsers, but some are browser specific. For some of those properties in the event object, jQuery normalizes them, meaning if the browser in its native event object doesn't provide that property, jQuery adds it in. Unfortunately, offset X and offset Y are not among the list of properties that jQuery normalizes. So the lesson here is, if you're using a normalized property like page X or page Y, which tells you where the click occurred relative to the upper left corner of the page, they're guaranteed to be the same in every browser by jQuery. But when you need offset X and offset Y, because those properties are not normalized by jQuery, I'm on my own. They may be there in some browsers and not in others. Indeed, they're not there in Firefox. I wish jQuery would abstract that for me too, but it does not. There are jQuery plugins that will, but maybe someday in jQuery Core, they will do that for me there. Now, let me show you one other thing. I'll hold that off for just a moment. Let me show you. No, I will wait until the next demo. Actually, the demo after that. I want to show you something real quick. And I didn't use the bind method in those samples. There are examples in here. For example, samples that show how to handle mouse wheel events in jQuery that do use bind. Remember, there's no shortcut for mouse wheel events, so you have to use bind to do that. It's also something jQuery supports, which is very cool and very interesting from an architectural standpoint, and that is custom events. In jQuery, you're not relegated to only the events that the browser fires. You can define custom events. You can fire them from DOM elements or fire them globally, broadcast them, if you will. And you can register handlers for those custom events. And here's why this is interesting from an architectural standpoint. In C#, we often, when we're designing large applications, we often strive for decoupling so that if we have multiple components represented in an app or page, sometimes they'll talk to each other using a publish-subscribe mechanism, but because it is publish-subscribe, it's loosely coupled, those components don't have hard dependencies on each other. Well, in jQuery, we can use custom events to tie together loosely coupled components using a publish-subscribe mechanism. I want to show you quickly how it works syntactically, and then I want to show you an example of this at work in an application. In jQuery, if I want to broadcast a custom event to any registered event handlers, I can simply do this, $.event.trigger. Event is essentially a static property of the jQuery function, which the dollar, remember, is a shortcut for, and here I'm just firing that thing globally. jQuery uses this internally at times, by the way. More importantly, maybe I want to know elsewhere in my page, maybe this is some JavaScript component that I've loaded from a separate JS file. I want to know, hey, if somebody fires that logout event fired on the previous slide, I want to know about it. So we're loosely coupling these components together. The key is the component that's calling $.event.trigger neither knows nor cares whether another component has registered a listener for that. It's kind of a fire and forget, but if I am registered, then I'll get the event. By the way, one thing that's frequently useful when you're firing custom events is having the ability to pass data with them. You can do that as well, and the syntax for doing this is pretty cool. What I'm doing in this example, by the way, I'm assuming that maybe this is a page with a component that provides a UI for logging in and out. And maybe when the user logs into the page, other components want to know about that so they can update their UI, perhaps greet the user by registered username. Similarly, if the user logs out from that login component, other elements on the page may want to know about it. If I'm logging in or out and I'm firing an event from my login, logout, UI component, it may be useful to pass information about who just logged in or out. Here's how I can do that. When you call $.event.trigger, you can use JSON to define a JavaScript object that you pass in. The only required property there is the one named type, which defines the type of custom event that you're firing. All the other properties are whatever you want them to be. Here, I'm passing additional properties named user and time, denoting the time or and date that they logged in or out. Then, in the event handler for the custom event, look how I access those properties. They're hanging off of the event object. A dynamic composition in JavaScript is being used. to make this syntactically just as simple as it could possibly be. Let me show you a quick example of custom events at work. Back to Visual Studio here for a moment. And I cleverly named this page customevents.html, so you'll have no idea what it really does. But it is another take on that Contoso Times homepage. And this one, you can actually click around. And I'm using the Ajax support in jQuery to go load this HTML content from a service, and using jQuery effects to kind of make it fade in when it arrives. But I want you to notice that as I click around in this left nav bar, the breadcrumb element at the top modifies. In fact, there's also a breadcrumb element at the bottom, which mirrors the one at the top. So to demonstrate loosely coupled architectures, here's what I did. This navbar component on the left, every time the user clicks a link in it to navigate to a new piece of content, I fire a custom event named content loaded, once the content has actually come down and been loaded by Ajax. In that navbar, I neither know nor care whether anyone is listening to that or not. But those two breadcrumb elements in my page, separate JavaScript components, if you will, they are both registering handlers for those custom content loaded events. So now they know when the user has displayed fresh content by clicking on another component in the page, and they update their own contents accordingly so that the breadcrumbs reflect where the user currently is in the app. Now, it'll look a little bit contrived, because rather than have the left nav element and the breadcrumb controls in separate JS files, they're sitting right there together in the same page, in the same script block. But imagine that they were separate components in separate pages, and then imagine the power of this kind of decoupled architecture. In fact, the code that made all this work is fairly simple here. Down here, I'm selecting all of those links in that left nav bar. Notice that selector string there. I'm wiring a click handler to each so that I know when the user wants to display new content. I am calling a jQuery Ajax method named load to have it go out to a service and load new HTML content and automatically inject it into the element whose ID is article. I'll say more about that in a moment. But more importantly, once that content has been loaded, I fire a global event named content loaded and pass some custom data that the breadcrumb controls or anyone else listening to this event will need to know in order to update their own UI. A little lower down, I'm selecting those top and bottom breadcrumb elements, calling bind to bind to that custom content loaded event, then calling a helper function named loadNavItems to update the content of those breadcrumb elements. So again, really powerful mechanism here added by jQuery, allowing you to build decoupled components. The larger and more complex your JavaScript application, the more beneficial this will be to you. Okay, are you still with me? Still hanging in there? All right, let's see if I can lose you here. No, I'm just kidding. So let's have a little fun here. jQuery effects. jQuery isn't all business. jQuery can be fun as well. In fact, in that jQuery.js file, which we refer to as jQuery core, there is a set of methods implementing what we call effects. Effects are essentially animations, things to add liveliness and interactivity to your web page. Now, sometimes when I hear animations, I think, oh, you know, silly little things. We don't need those in business apps, right? There are all kinds of reasons to have little animations in business apps. I'm going to show you a few examples here. But first, let me give you a quick overview of effects in jQuery. First off, there are three methods in jQuery that let you show or hide an element. Now, by default, these effects are not animated, but as you'll see in a moment, you can actually pass a value into the show or hide method, a value in milliseconds, for example, and it will animate the showing or hiding of that element by simultaneously manipulating the CSS width and height properties of the element. There are also built-in effect methods for fading elements in and out. Those are called fade in and fade out, or fade toggle, which alternately fades an element in or out. Essentially, jQuery is maintaining a count inside. It's not actually a count, but effectively it is. Then there are built-in effect methods for making elements slide up and slide down. If you wanted to build a table that had expanding rows when clicks occur, for example, and rows that collapse when an expanded row is clicked. This is an easy way to do it. I'll show you some demos, but first let me show you this. Those methods are shortcuts. The generic way to add an effect or to animate something in jQuery is to use the animate method, a very, very powerful method. You can call animate on a jQuery object, and you can pass in a JavaScript object denoting all the properties that you want to animate on that DOM element and the values you want them animated to. Here, I want to make this element disappear, it seems, by animating its height property from whatever it currently is to zero. In fact, this is exactly equivalent to this slide-up effect that you can access through that slide-up method. But you're not limited to just one CSS property. With animate, you can animate multiple properties. If you wanted to make something, say, increase in size by expanding its width and its height, or maybe make it move left and or right, you could animate its left and top properties. You can even pass in relative values here. Notice the plus equals and minus equals 100 px. That way I don't have to write a separate line of code to find out what the current value is, add something to that, and then pass it into the animate method. You can also control the duration of these animations. By default, here's a good interview question for you. By default, when you call some method in jQuery that animates something, the duration of the animation is always 400 milliseconds. But you can always change that as well. And you can change it in one of two ways. You can pass a string, slow or fast, into the animation method. Slow means 600 milliseconds. Fast means 200. Or you can simply pass in a number of milliseconds like I'm doing right here. And you can change that duration to whatever you want. It's also often useful to know when an animation has completed. Now, something I didn't point out but I should have is that all of these methods in jQuery that animate something are asynchronous. They return immediately. And what jQuery is really doing under the hood is setting a JavaScript timer. Each time the timer fires, it steps in, figures out which animations on which elements are currently active, and it updates the corresponding CSS property values on those elements. But that means, since it's async, you know, you call animate or you call slide up and that call returns immediately. What if there's something you want to do when the animation is finished? Maybe you want to programmatically kick off another animation. Maybe you want to change the background color of that div that you just slid down from the top of the page. When you call the animate method, you can pass in the fourth parameter, a callback function, which will be called when that animation is complete. Very, very useful. Let's look at some effects here to see what kinds of things we can do and how we do it. Now, some of these are a little kind of eye candy, but some are not. I want to start with this one. It's one of my faves because I sometimes play with this app for hours at a time. What you can do is click balloons and pop them like that. Now, let me refresh that page. I'm going to do it again just because I love doing it. What I'm really doing here is I'm using jQuery's animate method. To make a balloon appear to pop, I'm animating five CSS properties of that balloon image simultaneously. I'm animating the width and height properties to make the balloon expand. I'm also, because it's going to expand downwards and to the right from the upper left corner, for you that would be this way, I guess. I want the balloon image to remain centered, to grow outward from the center, so I'm simultaneously animating its left and top properties. I'm moving it as it expands, but only moving it half as much as the expansion that has occurred. At the same time, I'm animating the opacity of the image from 1 to 0 so that it appears to fade out as it expands. You put all that together, and you create a fairly effective illusion that the user is popping balloons. Now, doing that without jQuery, it's not that it can't be done, it's that I would have been doing the JavaScript timer and all that myself. Look how simple it was. Here's the DOM in the page. Here are those balloon images. They're all assigned the CSS class balloon. So I use a class selector asking jQuery to select all of those images for me. And I haven't shown you this. This is kind of like bind, but it binds a one-time event handler. In other words, it binds the event handler just like bind does and automatically unbinds it after that event has fired from the object one time. That's actually very important in this case because when those balloon images increase in size, the user can no longer see them because it has an opacity of zero. but they're still there in the DOM. And if I don't get rid of the click handler or remove the balloon image from the DOM, the user may not be able to click other balloons, which are now hidden by an unseen image that has been expanded in size. So this saved me from writing an extra line of code to deregister the event handler after it is fired. And you can see down here, by the way, I'm using relative values to drive most of these properties. Fast says I want this done in 200 milliseconds. You can define custom duration strings, by the way, if you want. And just to make sure that that hidden balloon image won't be eating any clicks, I remove it from the DOM once the animation has completed. I want to wait till the animation is completed, otherwise the balloon will go away the moment the animation starts, right? That's why I needed this callback function. Now let me show you something else real fast. Here's a little example. I'm using the HTML5 Canvas API to take an image and cut it up into 150 by 150 pixel squares. Each of these squares is an HTML5 canvas. But I'm using jQuery to do my event listening here to know when a square is clicked, and jQuery animations to slide these puzzle pieces around. Let me show you real quickly what the inside of that one looks like, puzzle.html. So here are all those canvases. Each represents one square in that puzzle. When the application starts up here, notice the jQuery ready function here. I programmatically load that parrot image that you saw. I wait for the browser to tell me the image has indeed been loaded. And then in this nested for loop, I'm using the Canvas API to cut that image up into little squares and draw a piece of it onto each of those canvases. Then I need to know when a canvas is clicked. So I let jQuery select all the canvas elements in the document, call click to let it add a click event listener to each and every one of them. And then when one of those canvases is clicked, I figure out which one was clicked, figure out if it is adjacent to the empty square, and if it is, I use jQuery's animate method with relative values to move that piece left, right, up, or down. So I get those nice little animations, the hit testing and stuff, in a browser-agnostic way from jQuery. Okay? Let me show you one other thing here. I want to open up a completely different solution in this project, and I'll give you a quick bit of history on this thing. The project is called Burton. If you're into snowboarding, snow skiing, and stuff like that, you may have heard of a company in the U.S. called Burton. They're headquartered in Burlington, Vermont. They make, some people feel, the best snowboarding equipment in the world. They have big endorsements from celebrities like Sean White and stuff like that. A few years ago, we built a website for Burton. They roll out a new site every year. At the time, this was in the very, very early days of ASP.NET Ajax. We used a lot of Ajax in here. We also used a whole lot of Flash because at the time, Burton was really into doing fancy things in their site with Flash. Back in the day there, once we had finished the site, with Burton's permission and with a lot of help from Microsoft Legal, we took a subset of the real Burton site and built a sample out of it that we put in customers' hands. Originally, we would give it to a customer when they came and said, hey, what can ASP.NET Ajax do for us? I've rewritten all of that to use jQuery. So today, when someone comes to me and says, can you show me why should I even care about jQuery? This is a site that shows all kinds of things that jQuery will do for you. And it does use animations. In fact, I've duplicated all the animations they did with Flash in the original Burton site, but I'm doing it entirely with jQuery without browser plugins and stuff like that. For example, you find these bubbling mouse overs right here. What I'm doing is registering mouse enter and mouse leave event handlers for each of these images. And when I see the mouse enter it, I began an animation that animates it up in size. When I see the mouse leave it, I trigger an animation that moves it down in size. There are other examples of animations here, and there are other examples in here I want to show you, but there's a lot of fun stuff. Using jQuery UI to do UIs for factory tours and stuff, time permitting, I'll show you that. We use Bing Maps to show some of the popular snowboarding sites in the U.S. Whoops, I scrolled in too far. Like, let's see, there's usually some good ones in Colorado, stuff like that. And there's all kinds of cool stuff around requesting catalogs where we have jQuery UI date pickers, and we have JSON calls being fired off to turn zip codes into cities and states. We have a jQuery UI autocomplete widget there providing autocomplete help and all kinds of other stuff. So I'm going to come back to that in a bit, time permitting, and we're going to look at some of the cool things that that site does UI-wise. But again, one of the important things I want you to take away is that site was originally very, very rich with animations and user interactions. It was all done with Flash. I'm not saying that jQuery will do everything Flash will do. It does not. But in this case, I was able to literally go in, rip out all the Flash from the site, and duplicate it all with jQuery, which is pretty cool. Go back to the slides here for just a moment. So we've talked about events. We've talked about effects. We've talked about querying the browser DOM and browser abstractions. Here's something else jQuery helps you with. Lots and lots of web applications use AJAX today. It's really the way we get out, make a call out over the internet from a JavaScript application. jQuery provides wrappers around AJAX to simplify it, to make it easier. And I want to show you some examples of what it does and how it does it. First off, here's a quick look at what JavaScript and AJAX look like without jQuery. If I want to fire off an XML HTTP request call to some server, maybe to download some content or to call a REST service, I begin by creating an XML HTTP request object. By the way, trivia question for you here. Does anyone know which company invented AJAX? Anyone know? Microsoft, exactly. How many of you did not know that? Microsoft doesn't exactly get credit for it. AJAX was invented by the IE team back in the late 1990s when they were building the world's first really, really rich browser-based web app, Outlook Web Access, and they found they simply could not do what they needed to do with the technologies of the day. So it was, I believe, IE5 or maybe 4 that first introduced the XML HTTP request object that is AJAX. And it was such a good idea that other browser vendors quickly copied it. It wasn't until 5 or 6 years later that we started referring to it as AJAX. And it's only then that once we attached that sexy label that people started really, really using it. But it was Microsoft that invented it. Just wanted to point that out. Sometimes we accuse Microsoft of not innovating, but sometimes when they do innovate, we don't give them the credit, right? See, I'm just making sure I'll be invited back here next year. Now, so we begin by, if we're doing this without jQuery, we need an XML HTTP request object. Unfortunately, there's no one way to create one in every browser out there. In fact, it was earlier versions of IE that are sort of cantankerous. So what jQuery does internally is it takes a multi-faceted approach to creating an XML HTTP request object, similar to what you see here. It first tries to new up a native XML HTTP request object in the browser. If it doesn't work, it falls back to the ActiveX XML HTTP request objects that earlier versions of IE supported. Then, to put an XML HTTP request or AJAX call on the wire, you call send on that XML HTTP request object. But before you do that, you give it some information. In the call to open, I'm telling the browser what type of HTTP command I want it to use. Is it a get? Is it a post? Is it a put, a delete, or what have you? Although it is possible to do synchronous AJAX, it's never a good idea to do it, and it is by nature asynchronous. So when I call send, it's going to return immediately. But if I want results back from the call, obviously I'm going to need to know when the call completes. So the way we do that in AJAX level 1, this has been cleaned up in HTML5 and AJAX level 2, by the way. But in AJAX level 1, we register a JavaScript handler for the on ready state change events that an XHR object will fire, not just when the call completes, but typically several times while the call is outstanding. When we see that event fire, and we see a ready state of 4. That means the call has completed. We typically check to make sure it was a successful call by looking at the HTTP status code. And if so, we use the response text property or response XML property of the XML HTTP request object to get the data. What I'm doing in this example, by the way, is going out to an endpoint, a service somewhere, downloading some new HTML content, and then asking the browser to insert that content into the document by making it the inner HTML property of a DOM element whose ID is newsfeed. Here's all of that in jQuery. jQuery gives you about a dozen different shortcut methods for doing various things with AJAX. One of those methods is the load method. What I'm doing here is asking jQuery to find the element whose ID is newsfeed. Maybe that's the main body of my page where article content is shown. By calling load, I'm asking jQuery to fire off an AJAX call to that URL to go grab HTML content and to automatically insert it once the asynchronous call has completed into the element whose ID is newsfeed. So jQuery provides AJAX wrappers designed to simplify this and to make it browser agnostic. Now load is one of several methods. There are methods named get and post, for example, that let you just directly fire off an XML HTTP request with a get or an XML HTTP request with a post. But the do-all, end-all AJAX method in jQuery is one named AJAX. It's actually a utility method, so typically when we call it, we simply write $.ajax. All the other AJAX methods in jQuery are actually built on top of this one. But we can use this one directly and do anything with jQuery that AJAX is capable of doing. For example, here's a use of that $.ajax method. I'm doing the exact same thing that the load method does. I'm just doing it a little bit more manually. But one reason it's interesting to use this AJAX method is it exposes more options to us than the other methods do. For example, it will be interesting to know when this call completes and it has succeeded, but what if something goes wrong? What if the call times out? What if the server returns an HTTP 500? What if the user currently has no internet connection so the call can't possibly go out? You won't know about it generally unless you provide an error function as well, which is one of the options that this $.ajax method gives you. In fact, there are about 30 different options you can pass in here doing all sorts of whoa, I didn't even do that. This is the first laptop that will read your mind. I was thinking about the next slide and I looked down and it's going. Maybe this touchpad is a little too sensitive. Let's see. I don't know. Scary. So here's another example. In AJAX itself, there is no explicit support for timeouts. There is in XML HTTP request level 2, which is part of HTML5. But we often want to know, hey, when we fire up that AJAX call, if it takes too long, if it takes 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 20 seconds, we may no longer be interested in the results. So jQuery adds in the capability to time out AJAX calls. Now, without jQuery, what you'd be doing is setting a timer and checking the status of the call or something in response to that timer to know if the call should time out. jQuery makes it easy. When you call $.ajax, one of those, a couple of dozen options you can pass in is a timeout value. Here I'm saying, if this call has completed within 5 seconds of placing it, I'm no longer interested. If the call then times out, jQuery will call your error function and pass in a special code telling you that the call timed out. So I've got several examples of AJAX at work here in jQuery. Let's take a look at one or two of these. Let's go out here. I want to go back to the original solution that I had open. And I want to run one named weather.html, which lets me type in a US zip code, like 98052, which is Redmond, Washington. Of course, you all knew that. Do a get temperature. I'm making a call out first to a local web service so that I can cross domain boundaries, and then I'm bridging out from there to a real REST web service back in the U.S. that takes the zip code and gives me all kinds of interesting information about it, including current weather conditions, 5-day forecast, corresponding city and state, and all of that. So here's what I did to make that call out. jQuery made it very simple. Let's open up weather.html. So here you see, not surprisingly, my jQuery ready handler, and submit is that the ID of that button I clicked to go get the weather. I asked jQuery to find it for me, wire a click handler to it, and now I've got code that's going to execute when that get weather button is clicked. First thing I'm doing here is this. I'm reading from that text input field what the user typed. Notice I'm using jQuery's val method to do that. Here's something else. You know, if you've built code before that users actually use, users will find six ways from Sunday to mess you up, right? Users, for some reason I'll never understand, love to put leading and trailing spaces in the things they type in. So one of the things that I've always wished JavaScript had was a trim method or something like it in the native JavaScript string type, but it is not. So remember those jQuery utility methods I briefly mentioned earlier? Things just designed to make JavaScript a little easier. One of them is the $.trim method, which will do what JavaScript will not. It will simply take a string as input, trim leading and trailing spaces, and return the fixed string to you. All fine and good there. But then once I have that zip code, minus leading and trailing spaces, I want to call out to this service with AJAX to get the current weather. So you see my call here to $AJAX. I specify the URL, the endpoint for the call. If this were pure HTML5, by the way, and the browser and the web server that are communicating supported the CORS protocol, cross-origin resource sharing, I wouldn't have to go out to a local web service and then bridge out to the remote one. I could go directly from the browser out to the remote web service. That is the big enhancement to AJAX in HTML5. But here I'm going out to a local web service saying, this is what I want, this is the function I want called if it succeeds. By the way, had it not succeeded, had it timed out or something, you would have seen that because I do have an error function and I am specifying a timeout value here somewhere of 5 seconds. But here's another jQuery utility method. One thing I have never enjoyed doing in JavaScript is parsing XML. It's so hard to get it to work in older browsers and stuff like that. jQuery makes it so easy. What I'm actually getting back from this web service is a huge blob of XML with all kinds of weather data in it. What I'm doing is passing that big blob of XML to jQuery's $.parseXML utility method. You know what it's doing? It's parsing it all for me, and it's returning a JavaScript object whose schema matches the schema of the XML and whose property values inside that schema have the values of those elements and other things in the XML. It makes XML parsing extremely easy. So now I want to go in here. I want to find the element in that XML whose ID or whose name was temp_f, which is temperature in degrees Fahrenheit. Called to jQuery objects find method, finds that for me. Then I extract a text from it right here, and I know exactly what the temperature is in degrees Fahrenheit at that location. So we see actually three jQuery utility methods at work here. We see $trim, which is very simple, but something that arguably JavaScript should have done itself. We see $AJAX, which is a little more complex, wrapping the built-in XML HTTP request capabilities of that browser. And we see one of my faves, $.parseXML, which makes it really, really easy to consume XML in a JavaScript application. By the way, there's another utility method in jQuery named $.parseJSON, which you can pass JSON strings to and have it decompose them. Now, in modern browsers, you may not need that because most browsers today have native methods named JSON.parse and JSON.stringify that you can use to generate and consume JSON. But the beauty of this is, with jQuery, if you use its $.parseJSON method or $.parseXML, remember, it's going to work even in down-level browsers. Works in HTML5 browsers, works in really old browsers as well. Now, we have about, I believe, 6 minutes left. Good, we're doing well on time. Let's continue on. One last thing I'd like to share with you in this quick introduction to jQuery is jQuery UI. Everything you've seen up to now is part of jQuery core. In other words, you simply include that jQuery.js file and you get everything I've shown you so far and more. There are add-ons to jQuery today which are just about equally popular and can be quite useful. The primary one being a library called jQuery UI. Here's what jQuery UI does. First off, it sits on top of jQuery. It does use jQuery core. But by sitting on top of it, it adds cool UI widgets to HTML that aren't there otherwise. Now think about this. If I'm building a UI in XAML, maybe it's Silverlight, it's obviously easy to build a very rich UI with all sorts of controls, tree views and things like that. How do you build a really rich UI in HTML? HTML has never had a control or widget story. So if you want to build a tree view, you've got to hand code all this stuff and all that. jQuery UI defines a model for UI components. It builds in a modest complement of UI widgets for you, but it's also sort of the center of an ecosystem in which there are literally thousands, maybe tens or tens of thousands of jQuery UI components, many of them free, that add all these things to web pages that are very difficult to do without it. Things like tree view controls and almost any control you can imagine. Now, Windows 8 Metro takes a different approach. In Windows 8 Metro, the basic API underlying an HTML and JavaScript application is WinRT. But there's a separate library written in JavaScript in Windows 8 Metro called WinJS that has a WinJS.UI namespace with its own Metro-specific rich HTML controls. It's very, very cool. What they're doing is taking an approach there similar to what jQuery Mobile does. If you've used jQuery Mobile, you know that you style elements or you turn otherwise ordinary DOM elements into very rich controls using HTML5 data attributes. Metro takes the same approach. jQuery UI does not, in part because jQuery UI was written well before HTML5 was even beginning to get on the developer consciousness. But still, I want to show you a couple of examples. One of the things you can do with jQuery UI is easily build drag-and-drop UIs. I'm working on a project back in the States right now with a customer who is targeting HTML5 browsers, is going to use drag-and-drop in their UI, but they also, of necessity, have to support browsers all the way back to IE6. So they asked me, should we use HTML5 drag-and-drop? If we do, how are we going to provide that support in older browsers? So what I've recommended to them is, for now, they use jQuery UI drag-and-drop. One of these days, when 99% of our users are using HTML5 browsers, maybe we'll then rip this out and go to native HTML5 drag-and-drop. But frankly, we're just not there yet. Let me show you a quick look at drag-and-drop. And then time permitting, actually I've got 3 minutes, so I'm going to close out with two demos here. If you want to know how jQuery drag and drop works, I've got a couple of examples here. Color drag drop, although simple, demonstrates all the basics you need to build a very rich drag and drop jQuery UI. What I'm doing here is I have 5 divs with different background colors to represent color swatches. I also have a div at the bottom which serves as a drop target for color swatches. And with jQuery UI, I can grab one of these things, drag it down here, an event fires, telling the drop target that something has been dropped on it. It consumes the data that I attach to it when the drag operation begins and assumes the same background color as the color swatch. jQuery UI does cool things. It's actually it that's ghosting that image and making following the cursor. I'm not doing that. jQuery UI will also, if I wanted to, when an invalid drop occurs, it will animate that object you were dragging back to its original position. Really quickly, if you are curious to see what it took to do that, it basically boils down to this. Here are my divs representing color swatches. Here is my drop target div. From jQuery UI, when this page is loaded, I query for all of those color swatch divs by class name, called draggable on each one to convert it into a draggable object. Here's where I'm telling jQuery that if an invalid drop occurs, I want it to revert that ghosted image to its original position, telling it to do so in a quarter of a second. This is where I'm telling jQuery UI that I want it to ghost the image and that I want that ghosted image to be 50% transparent. To make an element a drop target, I simply call jQuery UI's droppable method on it. And in this drop function you see here, that will be called when a drop occurs. Now, oops, didn't mean to do that. Okay, let's do this. I want to go back to close this out to that Burton application again. Well, I'm using a bunch of jQuery UI elements to richen up the user interface. So running this thing again, if you want to learn more about jQuery UI widgets, I've got a bunch of them in work here. This is an autocomplete widget, which actually goes out with AJAX to a real web service, pulls out matching zip codes as I type, and displays them there. That's probably one of the most commonly used UI widgets. Another one I've got at work here is a drop-down calendar that's called a date picker in jQuery UI. Tons and tons of options in this thing make it easy for users to pick dates for reservations, birth dates, you know, things like that. One of my favorites, and I won't have time to demo it, but there is a dialogue widget in jQuery UI. One thing that has always bugged me about web apps is if I want to log in, I'll click a login link, and a lot of web apps redirect me to a login page. I'm like, I mean, it's 2012. Why do we have to use that old paradigm? If this were a Windows app 20 years ago, I would have just popped up a dialog box and asked for the username and password. Well, with jQuery UI's dialog widget, you can show modal and modalist dialogs with any content you want so that you don't have to have these clumsy navigation models just to redirect the user around. In that other project that I had open, there's a really good example of logging in to that Contoso Times app using a jQuery UI dialog. I wish I had a few more minutes, but I don't. I hope this has been useful to you. Remember, winelect.com/downloads/jQuery.zip. You can download all these samples. I've included a few goodies in there, too. Thank you for coming. Hope you have a great rest of the day.